The following programming is sponsored by Pinnacle Medical Plus. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen,
around the Delaware Valley, we have a fantastic broadcast here. Welcome to the Kristen and Andrea Show here on WWDB Talk 860 or the Andrea and Kristen Show, however you want to fly. This is a very unique show. It's the only show on radio where we rotate the names at the beginning. but we do have an awesome show. Lots going on. How are you, Andrea Sasso?
I'm great, Joe. How are you?
I could not be better. It of course is overcast outside, but it's always sunny here in the studio with you and Kristen Buttle. By the way, we're going to introduce our guest in a second, but I just want to say one thing. Kristen Buttle has been here since 7 o'clock this morning, but she likes a big entrance. She says she's on her way, but I'm sure drinking coffee in the other room right now.
The interns are actually lining up with spirit fingers while she enters the studio.
Right. Exactly.
That's what I think is happening.
The
right
trumpets
now.
And all this stuff.
We don't have an intern, but we're open to an intern. If you want to be our intern, call in.
Absolutely. So our guest is Ian Norris from McElderew Purtell. How are you, sir?
Very well, very well. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come in.
Well, I know Jim McElderew pretty well. He's been on several broadcasts. I actually, the firm does some of the unions, the railroad
Absolutely.
Stuff. And so one of my close friends, Mike Murphy, is a labor leader with SEPTA. And so he actually introduced me to Jim. Jim's been on the broadcast. We do the labor show. So it's good to have you here. Now, I did a little research here, Andrea.
Okay.
Okay, I was going to take a shot at this guy. I was going to jump right. And then I realized he's a karate guy, does Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and a track guy. So when he starts kicking the crap out of me, I can't even run away from him.
Joe, I think that you stand a chance.
Oh, I do stand a chance. Let me know when you're going to be sleeping. Let me know when you're asleep, Ian.
I think you'll be able to stand a chance. I'm not running as fast as I used to. So.
Trust me, me neither. So it's great to have you on the program. And if you would, a little bit about yourself, your career pathway.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a lawyer for going on 16 years now. I didn't initially want to be a lawyer, so kind of pushed off for a year and a half before I took the bar. I was going to go to the Peace Corps. Just did not like law school and didn't want to be a lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And my mentor talked me into it to stay, and I've been doing nursing home law since I was a law clerk, and that's what I've been doing primarily for 16 years, but just dovetailed into funeral home law in the last year.
Yeah, that's right. let me say this. Okay, I was doing some research. Funeral home law.
Yeah.
Okay. What is that?
I was going to say, I don't even know what it is, so I'm sure our listeners don't either.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I didn't either. The kind of weird aspect of being a nursing home lawyer is you primarily deal with people that are older and they've either passed or are in the process of passing. And so one of my referral firms that it's based out of Florida said, hey, you know, it kind of seems like a natural transition for you. You like to try nursing home cases. Have you ever heard of funeral home cases? And I'm thinking, never heard of them. What are we looking at? And it's wrongful cremations, switching up bodies, losing bodies between the funeral home and when you actually get to bury the body.
That's wild.
There's people taking body parts from the caskets to sell them to
so
local
this,
universities.
Is this like a national? Is it a national practice?
Yeah. So a majority of my cases right now are in Arizona, but I have a number of Pennsylvania cases. New Mexico I'm looking at as well, but it seems Arizona seems to be the hot spot for me at least right now. But I mean, you've seen $10 million verdicts in Alabama in these types of cases.
Wow.
Oh my God.
It's just the type of case that people don't really think about, but there's a lot of respect for the dead. And I mean, we have cases currently where they're forging the names of my clients and then signing to get the bodies released and then embalming the body when they weren't supposed to embalm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Isn't that insane?
By the way, I'm sorry. Did somebody just come in? I'm trying to... Oh, wait. Kristen Buttle!
The best part is I have no voice.
She lost her voice, so she'll be signing.
How did you... not good radio, by the way. Typically not...
I tried to eat a cough drop before.
What happened?
I'm not sick.
No?
We went to the Mariah Carey concert.
Oh, my God.
That's what happened.
You know what's funny?
And that was like a week ago.
It was on Wednesday night.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so you got... But
clearly a bigger fan than me.
Ian, you watch any baseball at all? You
ever I do.
Okay. You see, did you see Rhys Hoskins last year when he hit the home run and he threw the bat down?
Yeah.
My wife and I were at that game.
Oh, my God.
I lost my voice at that game and never really thought about it. This is what I do for a living.
Right, right. Yeah.
Okay. And I got into a broadcast. I mean, I was in trouble. Like, I mean, I'm thinking, and it's a little nerve-wracking because if you do this for a living, or if you're an attorney, you know, in front.
Should be great.
Yeah,
I don't have court today.
I was sitting there, and for a minute there, you're like, what if it doesn't come back, right? And it was the beginning of the Loud House. Like, in other words, they'd been on the road for 17 days.
Mm-hmm.
And came back, and the crowd was going nuts. Hoskins hits that home run, and the rest is history, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but I lost my voice. So I was in the middle of a broadcast, and I don't know if it was this broadcast or not, but an attorney did one of the kindest things, and really, I didn't even ask him because I didn't know him that well at the time. I know him well now, but I saw him at a Christmas party, at his Christmas party. He's in Jersey, and I sound just like Kristen there, right? And all of a sudden, he picked up the interview. I was talking to somebody else. He was sitting right there, and I didn't even ask him to do it. So I know exactly how you feel.
Sorry. I'm just going to have to give the mic to Ian.
What I'd like to, right?
Ian's worst nightmare. Ladies, I told him, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Listen, I come in with no voice.
Here's the deal. Right now, what I'd like to do is turn the microphone over to Kristen Buttle. First,
our
if you
poor
will,
listeners.
The preamble to the Constitution, which would be nice.
It would be nice, but I can't do it today.
Oh, my God. Well, we're glad you came, obviously, to the... Now, it's definitely the Andrea and Kristen show today. But let's kind of... Like, we're going to get into nursing home neglect because it's a, you know, especially... I mean, it's an incredibly vulnerable population. It's taken advantage of. Okay, but this conversation about nursing home, about a funeral home, you know, like I guess negligence.
Yeah.
You hear these nightmares about the body parts and all those things, and then you hear, you know, bodies are racking up in the base. You know, like in other words, all kinds of. What's the most common, area?
Most common is usually a wrongful cremation from what I've been seeing.
Oh, yeah.
Or they have not, there's two kind of fact patterns for that. One, they have not given any consent to it, haven't signed a contract, and then for some reason they still cremate the body. The case I have in Arizona that's really particular is that it was a younger Mexican-American man, last name Salazar, and, you know, a shorter guy, littler guy. Family did not want him cremated. He was going to be sent back to Mexico City and was going to, have to go through the consulate and everything else. They get the body on Friday. From what it looks like, is there was conversations that took place. It was the end of the day on Friday. The funeral home people were talking to the crematorium people, and instead of taking him, they took a white female woman, they were supposed to take the white female woman, took him, and then burned his body. And then the family showed up on Monday to organize the consulate.
Oh my God.
And they had cremated the body.
Oh my God.
That seems to me to be the most common. What I'm actually seeing a lot in Pennsylvania, which is odd, is the alleged forging of signatures to get bodies released. And then also, I have a couple cases against a funeral home in Philly that they brought the wrong body out, put the wrong clothes on it, and then argued with the family that this was their body. So so it's negligent infliction of emotional distress and intentional infliction of emotional distress seem to be the main causes of action for us. But when you're looking for outside the people that were there visiting it, you're looking at a normal negligence claim.
And how do you value that? When you're, you know, it's an interesting, what factors go into
it? So that's what's really interesting. Pennsylvania has some of the lowest verdicts and settlements in the country because you can't tell the jury how much money you want. When you're seeing it in jurisdictions where you can actually tell the family, you know, tell the jury what the family wants, in that Salazar case, we have a demand of $12 million. I mean, the values on it can definitely be in the seven figures. And it really is fact dependent. Some of these look really bad in the beginning when you do an intake on the case, but what's key about it is you don't put a lot of resources out at the beginning, because every state has its own funeral home board that you can make complaints to, and they'll make a determination as to whether or not there was violations of the regs. And then that, if that happens, it gives you kind of the go. Pennsylvania, you can't get access to any of the investigative files. You just know whether they screwed up or whether they didn't. Arizona, they have a actual hearing for the public that's on the internet, and you can sit in and listen, and the funeral home directors that are being accused have to get up and explain what happened. The families get a chance to talk, and then you find out the rulings right on.
What is the insurance? Yeah. What type of insurance is that?
So you're not necessarily required to have insurance on it. So I have a case against a home in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania that has $1 million of insurance, but then I have two homes that have zero insurance. Arizona, it seems to be every home that I've made a claim against has insurance. In fact, I'm going pretty much against the same defense counsel in both those cases. It really varies state by state, so that makes a difference too. The cases that I have in Philadelphia that don't have insurance, the family's aware of it, and it's more of, you know, want to hold somebody accountable. So if we'll go hang a verdict on them and see what happens, we may not be able to collect anything, but at least we'll allow Philadelphia and people to know that these types of cases exist.
What do you think? What do you think there, Kristen Bartle? My question would be, you win a $12 million verdict. What do you, you know, how do you collect? What do you collect? There's no way. I mean, I can't imagine they would have $12 million worth of insurance.
No, and I don't believe they will. We just started discovery. Their disclosures are due here pretty soon. So I'm going to get a clear idea of what their coverage and their excess coverage looks like. But a lot of these homes are parts of chains, not necessarily in the Arizona case, but what we're starting to see is hedge funds, real estate investment trusts, they're going out and purchasing these larger conglomerates so that they become like nursing homes. They short staff them, they don't train them, and that's when this stuff starts happening. So if it's the conglomerates, you got to really do your corporate search to find out who the upstream entities are so that you can get access to some deeper pockets. But there's certain homes like it here in Pennsylvania, like they own a bunch of homes that they do have insurance, but you know.
Okay.
So did anybody ever see The Burial?
I did not.
With Jamie Foxx? No. I just saw it recently.
No.
And it has to do with the conglomerates that like take over the small town nursing homes. Right. I mean, I'm sorry, funeral homes. And it was like this, what was his name? Willie Gary was the lawyer. They got like $12 million, $30 million.
Yeah, it's
for this very reason.
When I got into it, I didn't know what type of values you would see. And then you start really researching verdicts and looking around, especially in Florida and New York.
Yes.
There are some very, very significant verdicts.
Got you.
Easy.
So let's do this. That isn't, wow. I mean, that's.
I know. Shocking. I know.
So let's take a quick break. And then we'll come back and talk some nursing home neglect.
Sounds perfect.
We'll have more from the Andrea and Kristen show in just a minute.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
Serving my country required sacrifice. Sacrifice that changed my life forever. I remember the day I came home. Because of my injuries, this house wasn't right for me anymore. I remember the narrow doorways, the small bathrooms, the shelves out of reach when in my wheelchair. Every day was full of obstacles. I felt trapped. I remember a better day. The day my family received a specially adapted custom home from Homes for Our Troops. That day changed everything. Now we have a safe and accessible home to enjoy the freedom I fought for. This place, our home, is exactly what we needed to rebuild our lives.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kristen and Andrea Show, the Andrea and Kristen Show.
Yeah, it's this little game he likes to play. Yeah.
We never really did decide on a name.
He never picks favorites.
WWDB.
We had some suggestions. Sugar and Spice, Fire and Ice.
This show gets a little crazy.
Yeah, I won't ask which one applies to which. Yeah.
You don't think you know? You can't tell?
So,
Keep listening.
Listen, if you ladies send me an email with your decision, I'll go with it. But having said that, let's talk a little nursing home neglect.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Obviously, very vulnerable population. Okay, especially coming out of COVID.
COVID was bad.
It was bad.
For nursing home.
So extremely.
I mean, it was bad, but it's also, the for-profit nursing homes set themselves up for this.
Of course. So you have, now you're talking hedge funds and all those things.
Yeah, and they were staffing short to begin with. When the pandemic hit, there was no way they could address what they needed to address.
Absolutely not.
Exactly. And so you often hear when it comes to nursing homes that they're often, I did a show recently about the veterans nursing home that is really, really good. Okay. But I had some experience when I got to the broadcast because I've done a number of nursing home shows where the nursing home neglect was the big deal. And you often hear that there's some good employees, but completely understaffed. Okay. And then we talk about how you can tell if, when you're researching for your loved one.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have any suggestions? Because I have one that everybody keeps saying, but I want to go with you.
Yeah, I do. It's getting more and more difficult. Under the Biden administration, I think we're going to see a little bit more clarity when it comes to the staffing. I mean, it started with Obamacare in 2017 with the payroll-based journal and them having to submit the actual hours that are working in the facility and seeing what the census is. And it gives you a better idea of what the daily per patient day or the amount of time being dedicated to each patient for their care and treatment. But the 5-star rating is pretty much your best thing that you can look at this point. But there are ways in which the homes have learned to kind of manipulate the data, especially with their quality measures and their staffing outcomes. But you also want to look at the Department of Health website. Pennsylvania has a very easy website where you can access Department of Health surveys. So either in the state or federal level, when they go in either annually or for complaints, and you can see, are they being cited for things that you're going to be worried about for your loved one? And then are they repeating those deficiencies or continuing those deficiencies? And so it's a little bit more extra work, but they're very easy to read because you see what they did wrong and what plan of correction they have in place in order to address
it. I also heard the smell test is a good way to, that's the number one, right? When I've talked to people, you walk in, the front door is always good, but you got to take a tour.
You got to make sure they take you to the long-term care section because their Medicare section, which is the rehab section, is always going to be beautiful and it's always going to smell great because they have to have the hospitals refer their residents to them. And so if they're not getting good outcomes or if they're having a stinky place, the hospitals aren't going to send them there.
Right.
But after that 90 to 100 days of Medicare runs, now you're going into long-term care. And literally in a lot of these facilities, the lights get dimmer, the staffing definitely gets worse, and that's where the smell test comes in because it's just the long-term care residents are the ones that get the short end of the stick, but they're the primary 80 to 90% of the residents in a facility because they're Medicaid residents. So they don't have the same reimbursement rates, and so they just don't get the same level of care.
You have a loved one in a care facility, if you suspect that they're, first of all, what do you look for?
One of the main things you want to look for is how their hygiene is and if they're unkempt. Mm. If they're being kept in the same clothes and you're not getting reports that they're resisting putting the clothes on or they don't want to have themselves cleaned, that's a totally different thing because they have a right to refuse. They're human beings that can refuse the care and treatment. But if they're refusing, they need to talk to the responsible party or family member and the physician. But if they're going in there and you're going in to see them and they're constantly in the same position, they're constantly wet and dirty, or they're not being cleaned, or their fingernails aren't being cleaned, that is a key indicator that short staffing is taking place. Because those certified nursing assistants, they're doing God's work. They work insane ratios, yeah, a lot of hours, but they're doing 95% of the hands-on, mm-hmm, what they call activity of daily living care, just the stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis. They're the first ones that get short-staffed, and so the first thing that happens, especially if your loved one can't speak for themselves, if they have dementia, if there's anything that limits their cognitive ability to pay attention what's going on, they're the ones that suffer first, not because the CNAs are being meaner or worse to them. These are individuals that have 6 weeks to 8 weeks of training making complex medical decisions on who gets care and who doesn't when they shouldn't be making that. But it's solely because the corporate owners have not provided them enough staff, because they're taking all the money and sending it to all the related parties that they own, the pharmacy company, the administrative services company, the lab company. They even are raising their rents on their own buildings where they own the brick and mortar and the lease.
Right, so they can siphon money out of them.
They take it, yeah, all out, and staffing is the number one thing that suffers from that.
Yeah, it's like they choose profits
care. Over people.
Yeah, profits, yeah, over people every day.
So if I sense clearly something's wrong, well, first of all, I mean, if you have a bed sewer, okay, then you don't have to sense it, it's happening. But my question is, let's say it's not quite that obvious. You see those signs. What should I do? Am I building up evidence? Should I call a lawyer immediately? I mean, you know, just so that you can go through it. What's the process?
I wouldn't necessarily say call a lawyer immediately. Some facilities that can get you a good reaction. Some it could just start the eventual till your loved one's being pushed out and they don't have anywhere to stay.
I get you there, but let me just throw a couple scenarios that if I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
I might not go to the front desk, okay, because now, they may, in a sense, start hiding stuff if they sense it. I would be concerned about a lot of different things because my loved one, and maybe I don't have power of attorney. Maybe it's, somebody who I just don't have a lot of control, but I'm noticing some things. How do you, that's what I mean, I delicately approach this thing.
So I'm more of the non-delicate approach. If you don't have the power of attorney, speak to the person who does have that, or if there's a guardianship. But what I do is you bring it to the nurse first, whoever the charge nurse is, because they have to document that they talk to you. Front desk doesn't document they talk to you. A nurse has to document that a family member expressed this concern. And then you start keeping a journal on your own. And yeah, just keep a journal that's focused on the care issues. If you don't see a correction, and if you're the power of attorney, you ask for a care plan conference. Now you're not only going to speak to the nurse, but you're talking to an interdisciplinary care plan team. So you're talking to social work, you're talking to therapy, you're talking quite often the assistant director of nursing. Now that's definitely being documented in a care plan conference note. They also have to put into effect care plan changes if the care plan that's in place is not addressing the issues. That is all documentation that you're being aggressive, but all you're really doing is doing what everybody else does, which is I want to make sure my loved one's getting all the care that they need to get. If that's not working, you then email or document communication to the nursing home administrator, because they're ultimately responsible for the operational day-to-day at the facility. And more importantly, if there's corporate entities involved, if it's a high enough issue that's not being corrected, they have to communicate that to their regional directors of operations or their regional vice president. And now you're taking it up the line to where if they're being bothered by it, they're going to want to have that change as quickly as possible.
Especially if it's in an email.
Yeah, especially in an email. And honestly, every facility has its own grievance process for the family members and for the residents themselves. That gets documented. It has to be sent up the line to the regional nurse and the regional vice president. And if you're complaining about staffing, if you're complaining about not being turned to reposition, and it continues to happen, this is going to get their attention because they know that they're steps away from someone calling me or someone like me. That's and so it becomes risk management, which is where you get your best care. The good thing is, and I'll end your response on this, is that most of, you know, they all use electronic medical records. There's audit trails for those electronic medical records. So if they even tried to go in and cover up because you were doing, you're coming in and causing a stink, or if they tried to go change documentation, that's being identified by individually identifiable information of who's accessing that chart and who's changing it. So it doesn't behoove them to go in and do false documentation. Yeah.
Go ahead.
That happens all the time,
too. Yeah.
So I've heard that there are not every place uses electronic. Is that, in other words, is... Talk about that.
So there still may be instances where there's handwritten, like, physician orders, or if there's nurses taking in orders before they transfer them to the physicians to make. But when it comes to medication administration, treatment administration, activity of daily living, and wound documentation, therapy, all of that is electronic.
And I think it also matters.
All right. That's all
right.
Don't worry about
it. If you're dealing with a nursing home, or a personal care home.
Yeah. Personal care homes, a lot of their documentation is still handwritten.
Yes.
They're not even close to as regulated, but they're definitely not as highly regulated as nursing homes are.
And I feel like that's the number one question when clients call too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And because personal care homes have resident assessment support plans, they call them RASPs, that can be handwritten, but that's essentially, they're just determining, can they provide the level of care there, or does someone need to be pushed out to a nursing home? But they've also started creating, I'm sure you've seen, the memory units, which are Alzheimer's dementia units, where these are residents that should be in nursing homes, but it's a higher reimbursement rate for the personal care home. So they're keeping people in there longer than they should. And I've had cases where what that unfortunately results in a lot of the time is you have violent, demented residents that should not be there and have a history of violence. And I've had a client whose head was put between the door jamb and the door, and they just slammed the door back and forth on his
terrible.
Head.
Oh,
you're, I mean, to me, you know, when you think about that, I mean, first of all, do people typically, you know, so if I see my loved one, okay, and they're you know, not being turned, or they're, you know, a lot of the things are happening, you're going out to the nurse's station, okay, do they typically stop what they're doing and go right in? I mean, you mentioned about having to, you know, I'm just not leaving until we do it. I'm staying right in front of you.
Yep.
I mean, you know, at least appease me while I'm here. Don't spit completely in my face.
Right. And it really depends on the facility, to tell you the truth. And it comes down to the staffing, because even though the charge nurse is usually not doing treatments, usually they're responsible for documentation, they're under the same crunch. The LPNs are under the same crunch. They can't get their meds delivered, you know, timely. They can't get their treatments timely.
Yeah.
So more likely than not, you got to stand there and wait, because you ring the call bell first. That's the easiest thing. But that's also a easy way to tell whether the facility you have your loved one in is short-staffed. Most nursing home administrators and directors of nursing will say they expect a response in 5 minutes or less. Typical experience of my clients is 15 to 20 to 30 minutes for that. For a bed sore case, you know, that's bad because it shows you the short-staffing.
You're
not about a ternary position. But if your loved one's a faller, that's very disconcerting, because if they're ringing bed alarms because they need to get, or call bells because they need to go to the restroom, and then no one's coming in to help them, a lot of these people will only urinate on themselves a number of times because it's so dehumanizing. And so they'll try to get up, but they're already fall risk. And that's where the hip fractures happen. And you see an increased risk of death for 6 months after that hip fracture. And a lot of my hip fracture cases are someone that was not on hospice. You know, they had a risk for falls, got up, broke their hip, and they were dead within 4 to 6 months after that. And then they start developing bed sores after that because they can't move. It's just
downhill from there.
Let's take a break, because I'd like to get into, you know, the pain and suffering and the factors that go into, you know, is that a wrongful death? You know, like, in other words, this thing could come from a lot of different areas at that point.
Yep.
We're going to have more from the Kristen and Andrew Show after the break.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country as a Navy SEAL. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. And I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed. Paralyzed Veterans of America was by my side from that moment on.
Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to our wounded veterans. We will never leave a fallen comrade behind.
Thanks to PVA, paralyzed veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments. The benefits they've earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
To learn more, go to PVA.org today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
Anytime Joe can get in sports, what we do.
That's right. Ultimate Fighting, right?
Well, I've been doing, I'm a black belt in Kenpo Karate, and I was really getting into my jiu-jitsu career and then was training and popped my arm out of socket twice, and it was two back-to-back nine-month rehabs, and I'm 43 years old, and I just can't do
it. Well, it's interesting. I tell you, funny you mention it, because my brother was doing Gracie Jiu-Jitsu for years, and I guess moved up to a purple belt or whatever, and I think his hip or something happened right in the middle. I mean, it was, and he's in real good shape, and he's, you know, like, yeah, he's been real physical his whole life, but it, you know, he was in his 40s at the time.
I was a student at Balance Studios. They're the best. After the second rehab recovery, and I've been doing sports and rehab stuff since I was, you know, 14 years old. And I just went, you know what? Like, I'm just going to stick with working out now. And it's like, I've been punched enough in the face and taken enough damage that I don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah, no, but I mean, but I'll tell you what, that competitive edge comes in handy during, you know.
It does.
When you're representing a client.
Yeah, but not great for trying to control my temper, but, you know, good for everything.
We don't have any hotheads on this show.
No. Maybe not on the show.
I used to run marathons, same thing.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. I channel it.
I hear you, but, you know, I guarantee that there have been some nursing home neglect cases that, you know, that part of you has jumped up. And you know, certainly...
It helps as a trial lawyer, for sure, to have that kind of competitive edge, because I swear every case I have 2 weeks before, I'm like, there's no way I'm winning this case. I can't believe I took it.
Yeah.
And then by the time I get to the first day of trial, I'm like, I don't know how I lose this. I don't know how anybody can beat me on that. And it happens every single case.
How often do nursing home cases settle before they actually?
So it actually, pre-pandemic, they settled more often than they tried, but it seems like everybody seems to be pushing these to trial. I don't know if they think that the values are going to be lower, even though the verdicts in this state have been considerably higher in a lot of different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are sick of corporations and nursing home corporations.
Yeah.
But I would say it's got to be somewhere in the 80 to 85% settle. But it's... I feel like I'm going to be trying a lot more cases over the next year and a half or so, just because when you move to a new shop, even if you've got a reputation, the insurance companies want to see, you know, are you still capable of beating them? And you may lose a couple, but if you try them, win or lose, they're going to start respecting you, and then you can get your clients the outcomes that you need.
So true. We talked about the difference between nursing homes and
personal care homes.
This is a big thing that I deal with my clients all the time.
Yeah.
And especially, and Kristen can tell you too, when you're assessing these cases and determining whether they're going to be viable or not,
right,
you have to manage the expectations of your clients on the front end because they assume because there is an impersonal care home, it's usually one nurse working in the building at a time and then some med techs. But they're there to just make sure that you take your medications on time, that you're not getting into too much trouble. But at the end of the day, you're essentially living in a home that just has care providers that walk around the building.
It's not a skilled nursing facility.
Exactly. And the only thing that comes kind of close, as I was saying, was the memory care units, the Alzheimer units that now are popping up in a lot of the personal care homes.
Yeah.
It's a higher level of care, but again, they're not subject to the same regulation as skilled nursing facilities. And so families will call and say, my loved one was in a nursing home, this bed sore developed, XYZ, and then you find out it's actually a personal care home, and it doesn't matter if it's a stage 3 or a stage 4, as long as they went out and got a wound care consultant or addressed it in some way, they don't have the same requirements to prevent them because they're not turning and repositioning you. If you need to be turned and repositioned and have activity of daily living provided to you, they need to, the only claim you may have against them is that they did not assess you appropriately, did not send you out to the nursing home. That's what you're looking at.
And it's so sad to have that conversation because families don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, they're at these places are advertising like they're going to take good care of your family member.
Or, and a lot of them too, you'll see retirement communities where it'll be independent living, assisted living, assisted living, personal care home, or kind of, you know, they're just name for the city. And then it will have a small skilled nursing unit on them. But again, I was just talking to someone who is involved in real estate investment, and they're buying up huge tracts of land and building just these retirement cities because it's an easy way for them to leverage it to the banks, and the banks can help them, you know, make more money. All the same thing.
It's crazy. I'm 59 right now, right? You start thinking about all kinds of things, and you certainly, when you're 59 years old, you see all your friends and their parents, okay?
Right.
And talk about not wanting to think about it when you're growing up. When I was 35, 40, 45 years old, let's put that one in the back of my mind.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
not thinking, right. you know, yeah. you know what? What's crazy about it is it's a massive, massive population. And man, it's a scary one. Even when you're sitting there and you're thinking, you're talking about the Alzheimer, wing, okay, how many people have to deal with that situation? Really, the problem, it's funny in a sense, and I'm being sarcastic when I say that, but you sit there and you plan for your kids and all those things, man. You never plan for your parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and believe me, you know, at one point, I'll tell you, you put your mind around this, okay? It's a gift when somebody dies quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and
100%.
You know, but you think about just that process of somebody going in that facility and you not having researched it, and they certainly maybe too old to research it. Are there requirements when it comes to HR in these places in regards to hiring, by the way, it does take a special person.
Right.
There were some great people out there working at these homes, no question.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But stereotypically speaking, you know, you think of the, you know, what they call a nurse ratchet or whatever, somebody right. who's just a mean, nasty person. Really, the person that could be the nasty person is the guy with the Ferrari driving down the street who's right. not visiting his home. It's just an investment for him.
Right.
And you know what? Why don't you take my money out of that and put it in this?
Well, and there are hiring requirements. It's you have to have well-trained staff. But the problem is people are going into nursing homes in this country younger and staying alive in them longer. And that's causing a crisis now because it was bad before COVID. Now, post-COVID, they cannot get staff in there. Every deposition I do of a director of nursing since COVID, they're having to cut their census because they can't have enough staff to take care of the residents.
Yeah,
that's creating its own crisis because the company
got to charge more to get it.
Well, and it's not even charged more. That's the problem. The majority of it is Medicaid, and that reimbursement rate is extremely low. And so you're seeing nursing homes just sell, and we're running out of nursing homes. And there's more and more older people. They're living longer, and it's a tough, touchy concept right now, because we obviously, as nursing home attorneys, we want minimum staffing standards, not only just for the health of the resident, but to be able to show to a jury that that objectively they weren't doing what they needed to do. The Biden administration has a plan to set a federal minimum staffing standard. It'll be lower than some states. It'll be higher than other states. However, the plaintiff's bar is kind of against it, the same way the defense bar is against it, because at the end of the day, when you look at it, the nursing homes are going to start closing because there just isn't enough people to staff them, and there isn't enough money to pay to bring in the new staff. So we're going to be in a crisis in the next 5 to 10 years where there are not going to be enough beds.
So and then scary.
When there aren't enough beds, I don't know what we do, because we don't know how to take care of these people and we can't bring them home.
Yeah, we've talked many times about change happening in the courtroom, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this is an interesting area where we're talking about, because in essence, you represent your clients just like you guys represent your clients. And if there's a, you want a good recovery because they have to live the rest of their life or whatever the situation is, no different than in your situation. And what you're really doing is making sure that it doesn't happen to somebody else.
Exactly.
Correct.
Okay. And so, and it kind of hit me because you're talking about wanting the standards. Okay. And so hopefully there is, but I get the point. I mean, you can't man, so we've done a lot of shows on police and different things. Even with John McNesby who's the union representative from and District Council 33, who represents the dispatchers. Okay, mm-hmm. Now mm-hmm. You hear all these nightmare stories. They're undermanned and all these things.
Yeah.
So this is one of those areas like you're talking about. You can see a catch-22 happening.
Right.
You know what? You can have the standards for all you want. We can't get anybody to man the jobs.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can't. So it's going to that. However. So it kind of the same with police dispatchers. I was driving up Henry Avenue about 6 months ago, and you hear about all this. So I'm driving up, and there's a tree on fire right up against somebody's house.
Oh my God!
And I pull over immediately, and I go and I come and it was really odd because it was like a Christmas tree type thing. But these are all either condos or they're apartments. So, you don't know if it's coming out of the window or not. It turns out it's up against the house. Okay. I immediately call, the 911 and get the police dispatcher picks up immediately. Can't get the fire department on the phone. Now he says,
what?
He was embarrassed. Well, there was nobody there. It was 9 a.m. And the point is, he said, well, they must be busy. They're not busy. They're just undermanned. So what's ends up happening is, because I know I live in the area. I know where the fire department is there. I believe it's right at Shawmont and Ridge. We're on Henry, literally 3 minutes away.
Right.
Now,
did you drive over there?
Funny thing was, it wasn't a big tree. And by the time we got out of there, the guy had a, bucket and actually got, but my point is, here's what happens when there's a shortage in an industry where, there's a major problem.
Well, I see the catch-22 to kind of push back against it, to dovetail really back to what we were talking about earlier. The money's there. They cry poor all of the time, yeah. But it's because it's going up and out. It's not staying in the home. So, you have CEOs of companies getting golden parachutes of, $20 million, and it's $19 an hour in Philadelphia to have at a good home, 19 an hour for another CNA. And that's a lot of the arguments that we make at the end of closings in these cases is turning a reposition, instead of having 1 to 35 residents, if you had 1 to 14 residents, it's just objective data, the outcomes are better. But that is money. Staffing is the largest part of the budget. It's what they don't want to deal with. And so they do not give the money that is needed. Instead, we want to send it to the other LLCs that we created to pass up through holding companies so we don't have to pay taxes on this money.
Wow. No, that's a great point.
It's crazy.
Talk about the settlements. Like what kind of settlements, you know, in some of those situations? What's possible?
So, I mean... There's very large settlements that are possible in these cases. You know, it's very typical to get seven-figure settlements on in-house acquired stage four deaths by osteomyelitis on the death certificate. And yeah. if it's a for-profit home that you're showing staffing issues and you can get punitive damages, that's where the real risk comes. Right. Pete Giglione, who's one of the best nursing home attorneys in the country, worked on this famous case, the Scampone case, that took almost 16 years, but it established corporate negligence for nursing homes so you could have direct liability against their corporate owners and against the home, but also established the beginning of punitive damages, which was if you have former employees that come in and testify that they were short-staffed, they told their directors of nursing nobody could do anything, and then you got survey history showing that they knew these problems, that creates the risk. So,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, certain cases have certain values. Like yeah. fall, hip fracture without death, you're looking 250 to 300. That's just like a kind of across-the-board sort of thing. If you're looking at, I would say, UTI dehydration cases that lead to death, you can look 350 to 500. But PA is a better place than a lot of the places I practice in. One, because we don't have tort reform, but two, because the MCARE fund, you know, the fund that is established by the Commonwealth that gives the next 500 of coverage after the first 500 allows us to argue on behalf of our clients to an independent lawyer for the Commonwealth to get the next level of coverage, where a lot of the states I practice in, they're not required to have insurance.
How many of these places are corporate owned?
A large amount. The mom and pops have pretty much disappeared. You have the veterans homes and you have nonprofit religious homes. But the majority of them, and they may not be huge corporations, but the majority of the homes in Pennsylvania are owned by a corporate entity, more often than not based outside the state.
No doubt. Yeah. Contingency fee agreement.
Yes.
Talk about that.
So it's one of those things. It's the toughest conversation we have with our clients.
Exactly. And Joe loves us to talk about this because he likes to call us. He actually is our biggest fan. He likes to call us superheroes.
Well, I also want the people to know that they don't have to not call you.
Right. Yeah.
Because they can't afford you.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
In these cases, typically when I take them to trial, it's $70,000 to $100,000 of my firm's money that we're putting out there.
Wow.
And we're a 40% contingency fee where they don't have to pay us if we lose. But, you know, it's hard sometimes to explain to them that the risk that we take on these cases.
Yeah.
I had a case I took to trial in Philly. It was 14 deposition. It was just a monster case. There was a nursing home side and a hospital side. Nursing home settled out, went to trial on the hospital side, got a negligence no cause against the hospital, and we ended up losing $162,000 in costs plus the 2.5 years.
So who, I can't imagine, you know, you even have to explain that. You're welcome to pay me out of pocket if you want. How do you want to roll?
Yeah, and 99.9% of my clients don't have the capability of even paying me for a couple of hours without
right,
the CFA.
Right.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Everyone has access to.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's no reason. When you get that call, okay, what's your process? In other words, when it's time to, somebody's done out all the best they can to try to handle it on their own, mm-hmm. obviously, you want them to have done that, you know, not just walk in and fail the smell test, and now all of a sudden
right.
they're wasting their, you know, everybody's time, including maybe their relatives.
Right.
You know,
our process is pretty simple in that, you know, I'd say probably 65% of my cases are referrals from attorneys around the city that know that this is what I do, and they send it in to me. And we will intake, we'll do an initial blush on the facts. I'll look at it and determine whether I want to look a little bit deeper. But usually it ends up with us either opening up an estate. Unfortunately, a lot of the times my clients have passed when they come to me.
Oh, wow.
Or just getting the right POA, getting it signed. And then we spend our own money. to go out and get the records. We have independent experts that then review. I look at it first to make sure I want to spend the money to send it to the expert, because right. I've looked at enough of these medical records. I can kind of first blush whether there's any there. And then we'll send it. And if we get the okay on it, we move forward. But that's the other thing. It's not a criminal trial. That's the hardest part to explain to clients, too.
Maybe in some cases.
But 18 months is your best bet if you're in Chester County and you have the records and you can start moving immediately. But it's 18 months to 2 years, and some people don't understand that, and they just assume that this thing should be done in 4, 5, 6 months, and Pennsylvania courts just don't work that way. It's a slog.
That's always the hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting conversation, because first thing somebody's probably thinking is, I'll just go to another lawyer. Yeah. Well, it's going to take them the same amount of time, but have at it.
And I practice in Colorado, and it's a double-edged sword out there, because their non-economic damages are limited at $300,000. If you get your best trial, everything you want, $1.1 million roughly is about all you can get on a case for these nursing home cases, because these people aren't earning any money. It's just pain and suffering. But from the date of filing to date of trial is 1 year. It's just a rocket docket. You are only allowed to take 2 non-party deposition. It's sped up. So that's very good for the client, especially for not having stale witnesses and stale evidence. But you also have to explain to them, I could get a $6 million verdict, because I can tell a jury what I want out there, and they may give me $6 million, but it's going to get reduced because we're statutorily not allowed to get over $300K for pain and suffering.
Isn't that crazy? And that's why people need to remember who they vote for in local elections.
Absolutely.
Because at the state level, there are things like caps on certain types of damages being proposed every day in Pennsylvania. So I'm just throwing that in for any, hey, let me any tell you, type of
oh yeah, claim. Listen, it's a great point. You almost got to figure out what is important to you.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, I mean, I do the union show in the city of Philadelphia, and, you know, there are a lot of complications. I mean, there's, you know, you open up certainly a can of worms there, no question about it, because there's social issues, and then there's your economic issues, right? And you sometimes got to make a decision on, okay, where am I going with this? But one thing about the trial lawyers, which is great, is that you guys are active, okay?
Yeah.
And what's important about that is somebody's not injured right now, but when they do get injured, they're going to have rights. You look at workers' compensation, and you know where they have that. Forget the name of the
Workers' Compensation Act.
No. The one where they stopped you couldn't sue your employer and sue your
statutory employer.
You can't. It happened in 1908. Where they?
Yeah, it's the act. They put the act.
Yeah, but what do they call it? You know, it's the
PA Workers' Compensation Act.
But they. Either way, the point is the workers' compensation laws. They want to take your medical away. You can have it,
right?
Okay, but if it wasn't for the Trial Lawyers Association, okay, fighting on a daily basis, you know, somebody's out there right now, and in Pennsylvania, you can hire your own doctor eventually, one way or the other, but in Jersey, you can't.
Yep.
Yeah, Pennsylvania has some of the best workers' comp. Yeah, the example I use for punitives, what was the Johnny Depp trial? It was West Virginia. I think they have like a $600,000 cap on punitive damages, or $300,000. There could be a corporate defendant, like a nursing home, for instance, that's making very big mistakes. They make millions of dollars a year. $300,000 to $600,000 punitive damage award is not going to teach them a lesson. And that's the very point of punitive damages,
that's
to punish these people so that they learn their lesson. So things like that are important in teaching a lesson moving forward.
Yeah, and I'm taking a case in Louisiana, potentially, that there's no punitive damages by statute.
Oh my God.
It's not recoverable in anything. And I always
that's
like
unbelievable
to say,
to me.
Everybody wants to get down on trial lawyers a lot, but every time somebody gets hurt, then they want a lawyer immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And if you take away our ability to practice in a state like Texas did, you know, where they took the cap so low, I mean, you are depriving you and your fellow citizens of justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So spoliation, is there a lot of hiding of evidence and stuff like that?
Used to be a lot more when it was paper charts. there was a lot more when it was paper charts. There are some really good defense firms that handle the major defendants in this state, you know, Buchanan Ingersoll, Gordon Reese, Marshall Dennehy, that they're just the lawyers will not I've never had them engage in it. You know, it maybe the corporation could potentially do that, right. But the nursing home bar defense and plaintiff in Pennsylvania is extremely well established, and it's small, and we go against each other all the time. So we're all very professionally courteous.
So I was going to say, is there respect there?
A lot. Yeah. Because we've all tried cases against each other. We have to see each other every day. It's not like New York where you're not worried about who you're going against. You can throw bombs the whole time. Even Med Mal, you can kind of do that in Philly, but in the nursing home group, you can't do it because you're going to get walled out by everybody else.
Yeah. Contact information at your firm for yourself?
Yeah. For me, it's inorris@mcelldrewpatel.com, and we're just mcelldrewpatel.com. Free consultations for all types of cases, but that's how the intake process starts, and you will eventually get in front of my desk and me reviewing your case and determining it's something that we want to move forward on.
Ladies, contact information.
Thank you so much, Ian. You were fabulous.
Thank you.
Kristen Buttle, everybody go to stampownlaw.com.
Andrea
Sasso, also stamponelaw.com. You can call us 215-663-0400.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Kristen and Andrew Show here on WWDB Talk 860.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Absolutely. Hope Santa brings everybody something nice. Of course, we want to thank Ian Norris.
Hopefully my voice back.
Oh, yeah. That is definitely something that I'm sure you want. Ian Norris, McElroy Patel for being our guest on
really
the broadcast.
Appreciate it.
For Tyler in the producer's booth. On behalf of everybody, I'm Joe Doherty. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.